This is CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.
Let me take you there. I'll take you there. Check. Good morning, CKLN listeners. It is the 4th of November, 2010. You're on CKLN Rude Awakening.
For the first time in modern history, the puppets...
I'm going to let AJ break something down.
...are being ignored, and people are looking at the strings that lead up to the puppet master, and that's why in the major think tank reports and what Zbigniew Brzezinski has said and others, they are so scared, they are so concerned in trying to accelerate their program because they know the public is now awake. Now, when you wake up, you got to figure out where you are. You got to figure out what's going on. But the good news here is we're not called kooks anymore. Oh, sure, Media Matters and George Soros and MSNBC try to do it. But MSNBC, during prime time, has less listeners, you know, than a major syndicated radio show. It's a joke. And so they can't be the arbiters of reality anymore. They can't sit there and tell us we're kooks, we're lunatics, we're nuts because we talk about these real issues. They are the kooks now. People see that they're the ones out of touch. Folks, remember this radio show and Ron Paul and countless other Patriot talk show hosts and leaders talking about the real issues, talking about what Glass-Steagall was going to do. And thousands of other issues. They remember us a year and a half ago telling you that they were saving the naked body images. Now it's admitted they were. They remember this show 10, 11, 12 years ago with medical doctors on and chemists and toxicologists about bisphenol A and other chemicals in plastics, reducing fertility in men, giving women breast cancer. Now it's mainstream news. They remember us talking about sodium fluoride and bone cancer. Now it's mainstream news. They remember us talking about NAFTA and GATT was going to destroy our economy and our industrial base. Now it's no one can deny it. They heard us talk about China was going to become the biggest owner of our debt, how the Federal Reserve had teamed up with them to do this, how the Panama Canal had been given away, how the globalists were encircling and bankrupting the nation. Now it's admitted. We told the truth. We had the common sense. And we didn't care if we got made fun of and laughed at and demonized and if the media tried to claim we were pushing violence when we weren't. Because we knew that the truth, an ounce of truth, can stand up against a million pounds of lies.
And that's right, folks. An ounce of truth can stand up to a million pounds of lies. And so we're going to blaze an ounce of truth today here on the show. Hopefully you enjoyed Ms. Von Castle's brilliant work on the decks for the last few hours. Apologies for any broadcast confusion, but we are here at CKLN Radio doing our very, very best to break down the news for you. So, Ms. Von Castle, you know what's going on now? She knows what's going on. She's too damn lovely. You can't say nothing. I dare you to say something. Call in 416-595-1655. See? Nothing. I told you, nothing. Can't say nothing. And so here on today's show, I'm going to break down a couple of election details. Sorry, I was a little bit late. I am making my way in from west of the city to go bus in at quarter to five this morning and from Milton, where I'm hanging out with my folks and taking a bit of R&R relaxation. And it's amazing. I'm rediscovering all sorts of domestic plebeian cool things that I normally don't know or see much. For example, I'm watching TV and I'm realizing that if you don't talk about politics with your friends, then the most serious conversation about politics you have is the one your TV is having with you. And if you don't talk with your friends to break that down, then you could easily get confused by some of the silliness out there. And so that's you don't have to do it all the time. You don't have to do it whatever, but certainly during elections and so on, you can't avoid the topic because it's uncomfortable and then expect to make, you know, the right choices come election time. And such a powerful, glorious medium, television. Wow. Can suck you in like you wouldn't believe. I know I'm talking like a 5-year-old, and I know everybody here has TVs and big TVs and flat TVs and 3D TVs. But if you haven't watched TV in a while, then it'll blow your mind what's going on. The speed of it, the pace of it, the clarity of the HD, the way it sucks you right in, and it's amazing stuff. And so gonna break down a couple of things for you on today's show. But one thing I'd like to do first is I'd like to introduce a role model, Ms. Bev Harris, working on black box voting. in the United States. Basically, blackboxvoting.org is an organization that keeps tracks on election fraud. A lot of people don't even know here in Toronto, if you voted in the early elections, October 5th to 13th, like pre-voted before the October 25th main municipal election, you voted using an electronic voting machine. And when I asked at one of these candidates' meetings, do we get a paper ballot, a receipt of how it went, they said, no, but it's done really, really well, and you should trust it. Fair enough. So I'm going to let Ms. Bev Harris break down a bit of the election process before the elections, and then we'll go to some of the results from the U.S. midterm elections that just took place a couple of days ago, November 2nd, from the Alex Jones Radio Show.
The website is blackboxvoting.org, and she's one of the preeminent researchers out there exposing these electronic voting machines that have gone in all over the country. And we've seen the same old stories. Whatever party is in power, magically the voting machines, in the case of Nevada and other areas, are trying to only let you vote for Harry Reid. We've seen a election official arrested and indicted in Florida. We're seeing record amounts of reports of this happening yet again. And to go over some of these reports that Bev Harris is tracking down in the last week or so and today. Bev Harris, good to have you with us.
Oh, hi. It's always good to be with you, Alan.
So where are you today out there doing your investigations?
I'm in Kentucky. It looks like Kentucky's going to go for Rand Paul, but you never know nowadays. Some of the most implausible results happen. So I definitely wanted to be on the ground here, and I'm also checking into a local sheriff's race in Bullitt County, Kentucky, the aptly named Bullitt County. Very controversial race in a high-crime county where a popular cop is pitted against an incumbent sheriff. I'm also bouncing back and forth a little bit. Was down in Memphis, Tennessee for a good bit of the last couple months. And I'm also expecting to see some interesting things in Washington State and Colorado. But I tell you, this set of elections is going to be – I've never seen so many close races or purported to be close. You never know. You don't know if the polls are right. You don't know if the machines are right. Everything is pretty much concealed from the public, so we're just sort of going on faith.
What do we know so far dealing with bizarre activities with the voting machines?
Well, you really called it. Whoever is controlling the machines is ultimately in power. What I'm seeing now that is really quite creepy is that the election officials are just blatantly handing it over to the vendors, private companies. Here in Kentucky, they actually have an administrative code now where the election official appoints an administrator of the election, and the person they're appointing is someone who works for a private company called Harp Enterprises, which controls 96 out of Kentucky's 120 counties. How wrong is that? What they're doing is they're actually taking and programming each election in their private office in Lexington. Then they come in, and you see the county clerks just deferring to this private company. Any question you want to ask, was that the machine you tested? Well, I'll have to defer to Harp Enterprises. I even asked the guy here, I said, well, what is the name? Did you appoint a name of a person, or did you appoint a company to run your election? And he says, well, I appointed a person, but I can't remember his name. I mean, how wrong is that? We have the public that can't even hold anyone accountable because it's some nameless person from a private company. Now, Memphis, same thing. Big, huge company out of Omaha, Nebraska called Election Systems and Software, which bought Diebold and then divested itself. Well, they are running most of the elections in the U.S., even though they sold Diebold. They're running about two-thirds of the elections. ESNS, in a deposition, the local administrators of the election admitted, remoted into their computer on election day to adjust something, and also gave them the database that they used to configure their election. It was all done out of state by a private vendor, and when candidates took them to court, they said they could not even subpoena the private vendor to answer any questions because they were out of state.
Bev, recap for people just in a few minutes some of the big frauds that you yourself have discovered and caught them red-handed in, and some of the others that have come out in the last few elections, just to remind people of the fact that we've had executives quit the companies that admit they were hired to engage in fraud, that the computer programs are designed for them to be able to hack in and then cover their tracks. I mean, this is so brazen.
Yeah, and again, what we're looking at, people think it's outside hackers, but it's not. It's the insiders, as has always been the case with election fraud. And so the real crime here is that we're concealing the process from the public, which actually transfers power to the insiders and removes our democratic process. It's really that serious. But some of the things that I've personally witnessed in Volusia County, Florida, in 2004, saw a group of election officials signing poll tapes. Now, this was several days after the election, and what that means is the poll tape is the closest to the voting machine report of results. What they were doing is counterfeiting results tapes from the voting machine, signing off on them, and substituting them for the real thing. We found the real ones in the trash and compared them, and some of them were off by hundreds of votes. Now, in New Hampshire in 2008, we saw an absolute charade when they took the voting machines that were programmed by this private company and they were supposed to recount the ballots. They had paper ballots, but they had an absolute charade in terms of their chain of custody. They were buying ink dissolving solution. They were leaving ballots on purpose in unlocked rooms. They were running around the county, you know, around the state in a white van driven by two clerks named Butch and Hoppy. I mean, it was absolutely surreal. So really what we were seeing, there was really a ballot swapping operation to make the recount match the machine count. And, you know, in Memphis, we saw in just this last August election just an incredible amount of obstructiveness where they actually had to bring the judge down in a lawsuit. The judge ended up at the election center ordering them to give up stuff that they refused to give up. How surreal is this? In Memphis, they would not give anyone the results of the election. You heard me. They wouldn't give up their own results. They basically announced that these are the winners, trust us. And when the candidates asked for the detailed results sheets, they said they didn't exist, couldn't get them, couldn't find them. Even after they certified it, it took a lawyer to get them to give up the results. And in a sworn affidavit, when it went to court, they declared that the results they gave up after certification were non-existent. I mean, it is so down the rabbit hole surreal when you really get out there in the field and watch what they're doing.
And they're doing it in plain view. Now, obviously, the different political power structures that are fighting for control over what voting machine company they pick for a state or a region, that this isn't, from your research and from my own research, one big monolithic system, but different cartels fighting with each other. You mentioned some of the states where you're seeing the really serious red flags. I want to go over Washington State, Kentucky, Florida, some of the states you mentioned. But what about Nevada, let's talk about that.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, Clark County, Nevada, which is Las Vegas, has just been historically crooked as far back as anyone remembers. But this is actually nothing new. I'm just so glad to see it's getting into the press. Yes, people go to the polls. They see their touchscreen voting machine ballot pre-marked for Harry Reid. This is actually, as I say, this has been happening in every election where people find pre-marked ballots, and sometimes with paper ballots as well. You know, they're picking up their ballot and it's pre-marked. Nevada, would you expect anything else? We do definitely see a preponderance of problems in areas that are based on a gambling economy. And I think we shouldn't be too surprised about that. Atlantic City had inside absentee fraud in 2009, where the people working inside their elections office eventually pled guilty to just adding in, you know, basically voter ID theft, where they would take real voters and vote for them in their name. And this is a huge danger, by the way, with absentee voting, because people keep looking for the dead voters and all this. It's not the dead voters, folks. It's the real voters who vote irregularly, and insiders vote for them in their name.
And we're also seeing the military not being sent their ballots, or the ballots not coming back. I mean, this just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, you know, it's turned into something where I think people think that people don't care, and I sometimes feel that way, too. They're always trying to justify that it really must be okay when it's so clearly not. But I think it's a situation where a lot of people feel helpless. They think, you know, this is just so surreal. I don't understand it. It's complexified to the point that nobody can follow the bouncing ball. But, you know, it's not the first time in history that we've had a basic human right, like our own sovereignty over our government, challenged or even taken away. And we have to get in there and engage. You have to vote because that casts evidence. I went to the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis shortly before I left. And one thing that struck me is they said, you know, if you decide not to vote, you have committed voluntary disenfranchisement.
And exactly.
Don't just hand it to them.
Exactly. The system wants you to become disenfranchised and just give up. But we've gone from 10 years ago in national polls where, what, 3, 4, 5% question the integrity of the system. Bev, talk about that. I've seen national polls the last few years where upwards of 90% question the integrity. And we now hear about all of the mortgage fraud by the big banks. We hear about Prudential and others signing secret deals to steal the death benefits of veterans. I mean, really, it's not so much that things are getting more corrupt, and I think they are at certain levels. It's that we're starting to learn just how corrupt they are, and it's a process. And by voting, by running for office, by being politically engaged, we expose this, and it seems like there's nothing we can do, but then, boom, suddenly the corruption comes out, and the scallywags that have done this get in a lot of trouble. And we are starting to see indictments and arrests around the country of elections officials engaged in fraud.
We are. We are.
All right. We're jamming.
Hope you like jamming too, CKLN listeners. Again, that was Bev Harris from November 2nd, 2010, on election fraud taking place in the U.S. Midterm elections for Congress and Senate. Congratulations to people who won, like Rand Paul. He of Aqua Buddha fame, if you are a liberal viewer out there. Nothing against people personally. But they are confusing the heck out of us by, obviously the mass media hiding the truth. And that's on the left and on the right, and that's about voter fraud. And another reason I played the clip with Bev Harris is that so many women out there have role models that focus them on, you know, how to look good. You know, your main function is how to look good. And even when I meet a friend and their wife or something, for after a little while, I'll say, oh, you look great, you know, to whoever she is, just because that's what you're supposed to say. And if I say that, they say thanks. That's one of the things they've been working on, and it's a fairly normal thing to say. And yet, if you get someone like Bev Harris, you can almost get the Susan Boyle effect. That woman, middle-aged, frumpy British woman in her 50s, maybe 60s, 50s, I think, who won British Idol worship, whatever that show is, with the singing thing, and became an international sensation. And I was at a buddy's house, and he was on a date with this girl, divorcee in her late 30s, early 40s, and she said she absolutely loved Susan Boyle because she could identify with this woman struggling against the adversity of not being as traditionally desirable. This woman was still fairly attractive, you know, for her age. But again, she'd been through some stuff, and she's competing against the TV and the youth culture and all the advice out there that not only tells you how to do it right, that tells you you're probably doing it wrong if you're not doing it the way they suggest. So, anyway, the bottom line is that Bev Harris is a middle-aged, frumpy woman. She's a genius at She's working on the black box voting issue for 5-6 years now, since the 04 elections. It's been an issue in American elections since 2000 with Bush Jr. against Al Gore, and the hanging Chad issue, where, you know, they didn't finish counting the votes. The Supreme Court stopped the vote count at one point in a decision they said was one time only, never to be done again because it was so unconstitutional. You know, not finishing counting 150,000 votes and just giving the presidency to Bush because, oh, the country couldn't take it. Oh, we're in a constitutional crisis. Man, give me a break. Nobody cares. Nothing cares. Everyone's just doing their thing. Y'all finish counting the votes and then tell us who won. So I introduced this because I was watching some of the old Canadian cable television-y stuff there, you know, just last couple of days. And I got to tell you, you know, they want us to take it easy. They want us to just chill out and take everything straight and miss the whole idea of corruption behind the scenes of the process. Like, just accept it. And even with the election here in Toronto, there is a direct correlation, because the elections here in Toronto took place about 10 days ago, where yours truly came in ninth in the election for mayor, out of 40 candidates with over 2,000 votes. And now I got to think, well, there's over 2,000 people in the city that want me to keep doing something. I got to figure out what that is and keep doing it, I guess. You know, not that many people in this city with that kind of mandate, you know, at least officially. So I'm happy about that. And I'm happy for the mandate it gives to everybody who works on these issues. My colleague Patrick and Kadena at the Conspiracy Culture Store at Queen and Roncesvalles, conspiraculture.com, book, DVDs, and more. For them to continue with their operations, which were already very successful in business for over 5 years, and serving a dedicated clientele and expanding one, and getting treated well by the media as well. So check out conspiraculture.com for their work. My colleagues Dan Dix, Brian Law, and Steve Davies, principally anyway, at Press for Truth, pressfortruth.ca, great journalism company here in Toronto. Confronted Officer Bubbles recently, the officer who arrested a girl for blowing bubbles at him at a press conference, and they have a video where I think we talked to Bubbles. I may have been there a few years ago, back in 07, when we were having a street action outside of Much Music, and the same officer, if you don't know the story, at the G20 summit, officers there, there's a young blonde girl blowing bubbles in the direction of a tall brown dude officer, and he may have been black. Black, brown, Caribbean black, something like that. And looks guy, and he's black to me. But the point is, he's nicknamed Officer Bubbles for the incident because he warned her to stop and then apparently eventually arrested her. And he's suing YouTube for a parody video that went up for $1.2 million because of emotional distress, threats he says he's received, and so on. And so my colleagues at Press for Truth dug out the footage we had from back in 07 of him talking to us about what we're doing on the streets as members of Toronto 9/11 Truth and related organizations, holding a street action, holding up some signs, passing out some flyers, and he wasn't being confrontational with us. And in fact, in the clip from YouTube, which I think I'll find and play later, he actually says, "I'm just here learning about the police state," and we get him on camera saying that, so it's kind of amusing. Anyway. That little stream of consciousness thought notwithstanding, back to the elections, back to Bev Harris, and back to role models. I notice in how we're being socialized and how we're reflecting, you know, our socialization, that we do like to follow archetypes. Archetypes, you know, who've been successful or who are well-spoken, who are inspirational. And so, again, Ms. Bev Harris at blackboxvoting.org is someone you can pass on to your mom and say, "Hey, mom, you know, I know you may or may not buy the stuff or whatever," or pass on to other friends, you know, in their 40s who are female, and say, "Hey, you know, check out what this woman's doing. Isn't it amazing?" They may not want to jump up and down and run around like crazy trying to fight the New World Order right away, the forces behind globalization, centralizing power under their control, different power blocks around the world who agreed to work together on a system that we're currently living in, which is heading to a more and more global one, with more and more centralized points of control, World Bank, International Criminal Court in The Hague, United Nations, Central Planning Organization, and so on. So to get through to people on the enormity of our situation, it may take more than, you know, just the information or just the facts. It may take an ability to share the work of people who you at least think they might relate to, because that's how this will work. You know, if you're older, if you're religious, if you're Christian, check out the work of David Ray Griffin on issues of 9/11 truth. He's a theological scholar, professor, author of 35 books, and the last three or four have been on the 9/11 attacks, which he says, as a Christian, he is obligated to expose the truth about, to stop the wars, stop the violence, stop the corruption, stop the encroaching, you know, quote-unquote police state, or really corporate banker state, as the architects behind this, you know, to more accurately define them. And you can share these things that people can relate to. Joe Rogan has been a guest on the Alex Jones Show. And you could always share an appearance with Joe Rogan on the Alex Jones Show with people who are fans of UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championships, just because they're a huge group here in Toronto, especially, and worldwide. I mean, UFC is a fast growing sport. So to help them relate, you know, pass on interview between Joe Rogan and Alex Jones, find it on YouTube or cop the MP3 and say, hey, check this out. you know, Joe Rogan approaches this like you would, in the sense that he's skeptical. He just wants to live life, have a good time, make some money, try and be a nice person. But at the same time, you know, he also admits that Alex is a decent guy, and he may have it right. And, you know, Joe Rogan carries that type of thinking into his own work and his podcast at joerogan.net, which you can check out as well if you are a fan. So trying to take a populist approach here and look at the rainbow of cultures here in Toronto. Heidi Montag and Spencer Pratt from The Hills were on the Alex Jones Show, and I put that on a flyer. And we were handing out these flyers as part of Toronto Truth Seekers last year in Dundas Square. And I would notice which flyers people would want to take, and that would be one that a certain age and demographic, you know, say, you know, 14 to 25, you know, wanted to take. And females as well. They'd see a picture of Heidi Montag on there, and the caption, you know, I would never take a microchip or something like that. And they were like, oh, you know, I want to read this. Now, if you just had a flyer there that said, I would never take a microchip, that same group of people might not want to read that flyer and learn about that issue and more issues discussed by Ms. Montag and her husband, Mr. Pratt, on the Alex Jones radio show. But because Heidi Montag's name and face and celebrity was attached to that, it was something that that people were interested in. So there's just a couple ideas for you dealing with the issue of election fraud, which does still take place, happened in 2000, 2004, 2008 with Obama, and 2010, and during the midterm elections. It's from both the left and the right. Got to get out of our heads the idea that we're supposed to settle for crappy leaders and then just be scared of you know, the other side's crappy leader more. And I'm actually kind of proud of Toronto, the city of Toronto, for rejecting a lot of that propaganda in our own media with respect to George Smitherman versus Rob Ford, the mayor-elect of Toronto. Because while I think they're both establishment, you know, insider guys, I do think Ford, you know, was saying better stuff. And I do think Smitherman is more of an insider and more corrupt. And, you know, the $1 billion stolen during the e-health scandal by his buddies, or lost, or, you know, however they phrase their corruption, you know, for mass consumption. I do think that was a bigger black mark against Smitherman than you know, whatever, you know, charges were up against Ford, including the marijuana and the drunk driving and, you know, just having a platform that, you know, really attacked the size of government. which a lot of liberals are not comfortable doing because they believe in the size of government as being, you know, the, you know, one of the most valuable things. But I do got to break down a couple of things before I just go off, you know, here. One is I have a Twitter account open. I have two Twitter accounts as your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna, or VJ, a.k.a. VJ Sarma. Currently, the Twitter.com/Black Krishna account is open, I think. So you can go to Twitter.com, and you can go to... There we go. Twitter.com/BlackKrishna. And you can Twitter me any questions you have. You can call into the show at 416-595-1655. It is Fun Fest here on CKLN Radio, on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. So do feel free to call in with any donations anytime here at the station. We'll accept checks. We'll accept donations. We'll accept possibly in-kind services if you think they can help. But as a community radio station, you know, some people ask me, you know, why don't you do other radio? Why aren't you, you know, on the CBC or something? And I say that the guy at the CBC that plays programming for, say, you know, one of their music shows, he gets a playlist. And then what he does is he pushes the CDs in and he pushes play. And that's what he's got to do because of the, you know, the radio station's relationship with the industry and with record labels and what's supposed to be promoted and so on and so forth. So that's one example of the type of control there. You know, we don't have DJs anymore, you know, like myself and like others. But I'm not a radio DJ, but if I was a radio DJ, then you'd catch me digging through my crates and trying to find all sorts of cool stuff, and you'd have some sort of trust in me because I'd be able to talk about it and talk about the bands. But it would be based on what I liked and what I found, you know, inspirational, moving, you know, important, rocking, you know, fun. And that would be the basis for the choices I made. But these days, in a very corporatized world of mainstream media, that is not necessarily the case. And so here on CKLN Radio, I've been volunteering my services here for the better part of 4 years in the mornings, 6 o'clock in the mornings. Can you believe that? First it was Tuesdays at 6, then it was 4 days at 6, and then a Monday evening recently. And now after the election, I'm back on the air Mondays and Thursdays from 6 to 7 a.m., coming in from freaking Milton to try and deliver you some news. And then work, and then play, and then head back to safe and enjoyable, comfy family confines, where I get to reconnect with what's important. And this is something I'll bring up now before I break out another clip, and that is the New World Order's attack on the family and the idea of the family and families. Because they've been working for 100 years to do this, and that is the forces behind globalization, the New World Order, the Anglo-American establishment, as Professor Carol Quigley called them in his memoir. He was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown Law School, and so he do know what he's talking about when it comes to this sort of thing. So, you know, through various think tanks, they promoted various ideas. But one of their biggest goals was to destroy the family and the idea of family. And in the Soviet Union, it was like that. Your loyalty was to the state, and each one of you was an individual cog in the giant Soviet machine. And they're trying to facilitate that here through a million different ways. One of them is psychology. And giving us the idea that we are who we are, our problems are huge, and we're all afflicted in some way by some fundamental maladies. That was Sigmund Freud's theory. And Sigmund Freud was basically picking up on the Christian original sin theory. We're all born into sin, and we're just struggling into getting it, you know, getting out of it. That's very dangerous to just say Christian this, Christian that, because, you know, there's so many different, you know, brands of Christianity. There's 160, 200 religions. Probably more than that, actually, but that's my ballpark figure. And so many different ways of practicing, you know, it. And there's so many different Bibles and versions of the Bible. And then, of course, there's the idea of, you know, the Roman Catholic Church. Well, the Roman Empire was who crucified Jesus. So if they took over the Catholic Church, you know, how much of their, you know, work can you trust necessarily? And so on and so forth. Now, this is not to slog religion, because, again, you know, in the New World Order's attack on family, they want to destroy traditional institutions that protected the family, including religion. It's simply to challenge some of the ideas that that may seem, you know, less forgiving and empathetic and empowering than you'd expect them to be representing different dogma. So back to the idea of original sin, Sigmund Freud and psychology. They replace philosophy, which is, you know, us figuring out how to aim for stuff and become better people, with psychology, which made it seem like we were fundamentally flawed and certain events could connect to certain, you know, persistent failings in our lives. Now, we can transcend these things if we look for better ways to think, you know. As Bob just said, give us the teachings of His Majesty, me no want, no devil philosophy. We've been up against people in power for years. They haven't changed, but they're trying to change us. And so it's good to note ways how. Another one is the Brave New World idea. You know, as I flash to a Globe Mail article, we are a Canadian news show, and I will break down some Canadian news. And that is that Aldous Huxley was asked in an interview at Berkeley in 61, or related in a talk at Berkeley in 61, that he thought that it's more likely for his Brave New World scenario of a drugged out, hyper-sexed, but a population that's drugged out of their minds, has sex all the time, but lacks emotion and lacks feeling for each other and for anything, really, but is just sort of kept busy with playing with toys and distracted from the bigger issues that that affect them, and that work as happy little cogs as alphas, betas, and epsilons. I read this in high school. I took this stuff straight. I was like, oh, what a neat science fiction novel. I didn't realize it was written by Huxley to brainwash us on behalf of the people trying to, the New World Order at the heart of all this, the forces behind globalization. So he said his Brave New World scenario was much more likely than George Orwell's 1984 scenario of a population constantly being cracked down upon by police forces, constantly spied on and surveilled, and constantly on the verge of, you know, rebelling while having it, you know, physically and mentally beaten out of them. Because he said that's just way too tough to maintain. He says way easier if you just get the population all zonked out and then control them that way. And it's less expensive, and you don't have to worry about revolutions if you chemically, you know, and sociologically lobotomize the population. So we're sort of seeing a combination, you know, the worst of both worlds manifesting slowly around us. And yet we're seeing things like elections and mechanisms in the U.S. and Canada recently to rebel against that. The Ford victory was, I think, a validation of local populism where, you know, we can say, you know what, it is a good idea to say, hell no, things are too corrupt and government's too big and wasteful and it's benefiting the wrong people. Hell, you know, or hell yeah, or hell no, we're not going to take it anymore. And we're going to talk some mess about it. And Ford's anger, Rob's rage, was certainly something that resonated with people. At the same time, in the United States, the Tea Party movement, heavily co-opted in many sectors by the Republicans, by the Republican establishment, has some bright spots in it. And so to dismiss them all as teabaggers just because it's fun to say or call them all racist just because it makes you feel, you know, better, you know, and you know, to stereotype in that way is to deny the issues that would get people off their butts, you know. If you're just a teabagger goofball, then you'll probably just, you know, kick it watching TV. And if you're just a racist, you probably, you know, are probably a moron, unless you're, you know, a really high-ranking organized racist. You're probably just a moron, and so you probably wouldn't have the wherewithal to get, you know, really big events organized and to actually work on your political system. So since man-to-man is so unjust, you get people like Rand Paul in Kentucky elected. He did eventually win that seat. And in this situation where we're being confused by the media, your worst enemy could be your best friend. as Mr. Marley is suggesting here in this clip. But back to the drugging of kids. Back to the drugging of our children. Oh, here we go. I'm at the Globe and Mail's website, theglobeandmail.com. Part three, are we medicating a disorder or treating boyhood as a disease? And I brought this up several times in the show. There's a new McLean's article that also references the same thing. Why are we raising underachieving boys that turn into underachieving men? And this is from Carolyn Abraham from October 18th, last updated on October 25th. It says here, the decline of male teachers, and this is part three, the decline of male teachers in primary schools, Professor Bradley suspects, is partly to blame for the ballooning drug use. Quote, what are we drugging? Female teachers who don't understand boys like to run and jump and shout, that's what boys do. Medications are definitely needed in some cases, he says, quote, but definitely not in the quantity that we are seeing them. There's been a massive increase in the medicating of especially young boys, but also young girls, for attention deficit disorder and so on, since 2005, and yet the dangers of these drugs, see a movie like Generation RX by journalist Kevin P. Miller, see again Generation RX, or see my interview with Kevin Miller at pressfortruth.ca, you can get a sense of the research into the people who question this practice, and you look at the number of people that talk about, you know, kids basically lobotomized, not the same, committing suicide based on these drugs. Back to the article. Diagnosing ADHD has been a medical minefield ever since the rise of the so-called Ritalin generation in the 1980s and 90s. With no blood tests or any other biological means to confirm an ADHD case, psychiatrists, psychologists, or a general practitioner diagnose children after a clinical assessment or often with behavioral reports from parents and teachers. But evaluations are subjective, and the distinction between ADHD symptoms and standard childhood traits can be quite subtle, such as forgetfulness and fidgeting. Quote, we don't have a biological test to rule out ADHD, and that gives rise to the possibility that ADHD may be misdiagnosed or missed, says Rosemary Tanick, a psychologist at Toronto's Hospital for Sick Children who studies children with the disorder. So you notice how she shades things, may be misdiagnosed or missed. That's her concern about the lack of a biological indicator to suggest a child has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or they're a child, and they're curious, and they're frustrated at times, or maybe they're getting whacked with some other toxins. Maybe they got hit by vaccines, and they've got other things coursing through them. But again, back in my day when I was a kid, and this may reveal a few things about me, but the teachers just said, all right, you know what, you kids are too, rowdy. Everybody get outside. We all got outside, ran around, screamed our heads off, came back in and settled down. And at that point, not only did we burn off some energy for 15 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever we were allowed to, we owed the teacher. And we learned to pay the teacher back by being more attentive and better students to whatever the heck they were on about. Dr. Tanick says biological signs of syndrome exist. Imaging studies show brain development in children with ADHD lags 2 to 3 years behind normal brain, particularly in the prefrontal area and area involved with self-control. The less mature a brain looks, she says, the more severe the symptoms, though kids with ADHD score average and above average in IQ tests. So you can still be smart. You're just more fidgety, and you're just more curious, and you're just more frustrated with some of the BS you're being fed through our public school system as well. And that's just one part of it. The other part is the drugs and their effectiveness. And again, as I mentioned in a little litany there, a lot of questions around the effectiveness of these drugs in curing that problem, even if it exists and even if it can be seen by a medical imaging scan. But I'm flying through things here, trying to play a YouTube clip that won't play, so screw it. Had another clip, not going to play. But it says here, questions loom over Harry Reid's victory as Steele, Nevada, number one on Google. People often ask, what can we do about this? Well, As I've mentioned on the show before, the Alex Jones radio audience, I've been on for a couple months, so I'll bring it back up. At Infowars.com, you can see the Alex Jones radio show audience. And I shout out the Jones Show because they are the best in the biz at doing something about this sort of thing. And what his listeners are doing is they're entering search terms into Google to make them number one in Google Trends. And they know that many of us want to know what trending topics are, what's hot, and click on those to see what got so many people's attention. And Steele, Nevada, for Democratic leader Harry Reid, is number one. Steele, Nevada's been number one. 9/11 truth issues have been number one. And so this is something simple that they can do. But I got to say, this has been going on for months now. And I'm surprised at how consistent this practice by the Alex Jones Show and his listeners is. And then yet, I realize that we like that type of consistency. The one-off approach to doing this thing doesn't feel very secure. And when you do something like this and you feel the worth and the weight of so many people behind you doing it, there's more of a sense of pride and togetherness and responsibility and an appreciation for the fact that, you know, you have some support in this area. And so simple things like Google searches, comments on message boards. When you see this Globe and Mail article, shout out Generation RX. You know, post a link to it. I've done stuff like this on news articles before. We'll continue to again. But if you happen to be online a lot, you can make some of these things your own, and you can actually develop your own audience in some ways on these sites, either overtly or covertly, that like what you have to say and that like the perspective you're bringing to, you know, what they normally see, and so you can thicken out the analysis by commenting on message boards, on you know, websites, on articles at thestar.com, theglobemail.com. TorontoSun.com, NationalPost.com, and so on. So there's another idea. I posted my interviews with Professor Timothy Ball on an Australian website the other day that was featuring some videos of an interview with him. And people, you know, commented after that, liked it. I checked the view counts, the download hits for my stuff at archive.org. They went up by a few here and there, and so people actually, you know, people do click through to those links. People are curious and hungry for information. One thing I'd recommend we avoid is a sheer dependence on the idea of the herd mentality that's used so successfully against us by the people that promote the things they, you know, want us to do. So aside from the big trends out there in society to sort of, you know, check your head about, there is the idea of protests and even the giant Tea Party and other rallies taking place in the U.S. We've seen what they've accomplished because we're here. It is November 4th, 2010, and we are in the midst of a global depression. We have political systems that, while appealing to us, also fail us quite often. And so what can we do? Well, we can calmly and consistently share information instead. That's something that that I strongly recommend. And we can calmly and consistently work on certain things to ask for from our local elected officials, the people that are directly beholden to us. So I'll have some more information on a campaign I'm starting up about that shortly for 2011, taking us into 2012. Just a quick look at the Metro before Mr. Bill Watson takes you on a four-hour jazz bungee experience. Harry, NFL star, talks up his locks. Giant afroed NFL star on the cover. What may be hiding in that cargo? Plenty fears one senator talk about dock security as a way of both reinforcing the terror myth and prepping us for more false flag attacks and jacking up prices and jacking up taxes. Unbelievable stuff here on the cover of today's Metro Subway newspaper edition. Stupid but not criminal. The OPP has conducted interviews but won't say if those in costume had spoken to behavior won't say if those in costume had been spoken to. Behaviors not condoned, says Royal Canadian Legion president. That's right. Somebody showed up in a Royal Canadian Legion costume in a KKK outfit with a guy in blackface as a black slave for Halloween and won first prize. And now they're being upbraided for that. So, and yet, these race issues, that's horrible. And, of course, it should be upbraided. But the race issues, the sex issues, all these hot-button issues, divide us from the real hardcore political issues. We're up against financial oligarchs. financial oligarchs, money masters, people that control systems that dictate how much we make, how much we're taxed, and that dictate the content of our entertainment and our lives and everything. If you control the world's money supply, you control the world, and that's what they're trying to do at this point in history. So what can you do? Again, calmly and consistently share information with your folks. Share some role models in this area. Share some specifics. If people have kids, say, hey, look, here's three or four quick links to some things that might be worth looking at, you know, just on behalf of your children. And try and do things that reinforce the idea of family, which is one of the places this started as well. Good place to check out include Infowars.com, NaturalNews.com, VigilantCitizen.com, BRAN.org for legal vaccine exemption forms. If your kids are in school, if you know people with kids in school, they might be getting shot this flu season. So to prevent that from happening, at least look into it more at VRAN.org and perhaps download legal Ontario government exemption forms. Locally, PressForTruth.ca, ConspiracyCulture.com, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, the Toronto Street News homeless paper out there. It's getting colder, folks. Flip a homeless guy a toonie. Get some info about this stuff. Stuff that can improve your life and the lives of others, and get some good karma and hook up a homeless guy with some coffee money so he can chill out or warm up a bit. I'm out of here. It's been a great November 4th. Have a fantastic Thursday. Have a fantastic weekend. I will see you on Monday. And keep in mind, when you're looking at the midterm elections in the U.S., that there was election fraud. So to get the fuller, bigger picture, the one that the mass media won't talk about much, do check out Infowars.com. Stephen Colbert even mentioned it the other day on his show, the idea of election fraud, during his live midterm election coverage. So people are trying to sneak his clues all the time. Let's look for them, and if we find them and if we share them, don't worry, everything will be all right. Peace out, everybody.
But did you know what's